sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
Mm, it's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
Yeah. Hey.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. We're going to talk about our top of the hour feature, but we'll come back with your calls and your questions. You can call us at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. This morning, we wanted to start the 9 o'clock hour talking about peach trees, peach tree pruning. Anton, people can prune now, right?
They need to prune now. Things are moving along really quickly. And so we need to get this pruning done. So peaches are our most commonly grown fruit. And they're one that in homeowners' yards oftentimes don't last longer than about 10 years because of either a lack of maintenance or a lack of knowledge about how to maintain them properly.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's the peach tree borer that is problematic, which I'll quickly bring up. The adults lay eggs on the, especially at the base of the tree, but anywhere on the trunk and lower limbs, and the eggs hatch and will then drill or bore into the trunk. And you about 80% of the time find them at the base of the tree. You might have to move the soil a little bit, but you'll see what looks like a canker with gum, you know, with pine sap or pine gum coming out of it. And it's really gelatinous. And so to prevent that, you need to spray something along the lines of permethrin or spinosad, which is oftentimes organic, and you can look up the timing on those. But you spray from early to mid-June through mid-September.
Okay, remind That's just people for where caller. To get the timing.
Yeah, so the timings are, but subscribe to the USU Pest Lab Fruit Tree Updates. And so if you do an internet search of USU Pest Lab subscription, for, you know, fruit update, something similar, it'll bring the page up. Sign up. They're free. We don't share information with anybody. And they will tell you down to the day about when you need to spray. So there is that portion of it. But I wanted to bring that up because pruning and proper care will help keep the tree healthier and make the trees less susceptible to being targeted by the peach tree borer because they focus on stress trees because they're easier to penetrate and to eat, I suppose.
Yeah.
So
pruning is so important with peach trees too, because if you don't prune them properly, the branches get too heavy and then they break.
They do. And so that leads us into our first principle, and we need folks to stop pruning all the wood out of the middle of the trees. It's just like we have to, you know, we have to clean it all out. There's just this psychological urge to clean every last branch out of the middle of the tree. We need to stop it. Because what will happen, as you mentioned, is we prune all the branches out of the middle and leave all the fruiting wood at the edges of the branches, at the top and the sides. And as that fruit matures, if you can imagine holding your arm out horizontally with a 10-pound weight, you're not going to be able to support that weight very long. And your arm, you'll need to bring it down. And that's exactly what happens to the peach trees in August,
mm-hmm.
when the peaches are ripening and quickly expanding. If you have 25 or 30 or 40 peaches out on the very edge of a limb, that limb is going to fold down like an umbrella. And so in commercial orchards, they will use the open center pruning, but they have branches that are a foot to 18 inches long at the longest along most of the length of the structural branches. And the fruit is harvested from those side branches. And because peaches only fruit on one-year-old wood, all that old wood can come out, or most of it. And so this year's new branches is next year's peaches. And so they thin them in the spring about this time so that they have fruit evenly distributed all the way along the length of the branch.
Okay. How else can they learn about pruning peach trees? It's kind of tough to describe pruning a peach tree over the radio.
Michelle will post a fact sheet to our social media, especially Facebook. And then if they go to the USU Extension YouTube channel, there are several videos about how to prune peaches. JD Gunnell and Jerry Goodspeed are on one or two of them. I think we've got another one up, but there are videos on YouTube on the specifics of how to prune peaches.
Anything else you want to share with our listeners?
Well, when you prune a peach, and it's the only fruit tree that you can do it to for the most part, is you can take up to 50% of the wood off of the peach. But definitely watch those videos. And remember the three D's of pruning: dead branches, diseased branches, and dumb branches. The dumb branches are the crossing branches, the branches that are growing straight down, the branches are growing straight up in the air that will be weak. But if you can remember that principle of dead, diseased, and dumb, that will get you a long way.
I like that. It does make it a lot easier to decide how to prune the tree.
It does.
And don't take out those new branches in the center of the tree.
No, and you can have the center a little bit opened, but you need to have the fruiting wood. You know, if it's in the lawn, you need to be able to mow under the tree, but you need to have fruiting wood along the entire length of the branch so that you evenly distribute the peach load. And then when the peaches are about dime size, thin them so you have one peach for every 6 inches to foot of branch.
All right. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us, 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton taking your calls and questions. Next listener, Ton, wants to know, how do you transplant rhubarb?
You want to dig it when it is dormant, preferably in late fall. If you wanted to do it now, and if it's already popping up, I would wait. But what you'll find is that you have what's called the crown, and that's where the leaves come up from. But if you carefully work the dirt away from the top of the crown, you'll find little nodes or buds, and they're a little swelling. And you want three or four of them per division. So if you use a shovel to cut it apart, you want a good 3 or 4 inch wide piece of that rhubarb with 3 or 4 or 5 little buds on there. And so you can move that with as many roots as you can get to a new home. But if they've already started to push out of the ground, I would wait until this fall after they go dormant.
All right. Next listener would like to know, they say we touched on this last week. I think we've touched on this for the last few weeks, but they say, you said don't dethatch now. They want to know, but when do you dethatch?
Only when you absolutely need to. There isn't a calendar date. It's really rough on your lawn. And if you have a minor thatch problem, you may be able to eliminate it by using aeration and proper lawn watering. So aerate in the spring and fall and water less often, so that your lawn dries out moderately between irrigations. You know, one thing they can do is take a shovel and just kind of shove it into the ground in the lawn, wiggle it back and forth so they can see the soil profile. And where the soil stops, there will be a layer of what looks like dead grass, and then eventually you will see where the grass is growing from. And what that usually is actually dead roots and crowns. There's not a lot of grass blades in it. And if there's about a half inch of thatch underneath where the blades grow, that's healthy and you don't need to remove it. If you've got more than an inch, they may consider dethatching once just to get rid of it. But dethatching isn't going to do them any good longer term if they can't solve why the thatch is forming in excessive amounts.
Why do you think there's always this confusion about dethatching? Because was it once recommended to dethatch?
People did dethatch once a year. I remember going out with my dad a few times with rakes and areas that we might, you know, we thought we had too much thatch, and raking it out. And you do pull a lot of dead crowns and some grass blades and things out in the spring. But if they're left intact, if your lawn's healthy and there's not more than a half inch of thatch, by early May, the lawn usually fills in and that dead grass breaks down. But if you need to, you can, but it's just really rough on the lawn. The best time to do it is in the spring when the temperatures are consistently 70 degrees or in late August as we start to cool down so that the cooler temperatures allow the lawn to recover more quickly.
All right, next listener wants to know, which strawberry do you like, the Albion or the Seacrest, and why?
Never eaten either of them.
Okay.
Both of them, I think, are popular varieties and are good. The main strawberries I've grown are actually, I can't even pronounce it. It's spelled honey eye, but H-O-N-E-Y-O-Y-E or something. It's got a really strange, you shouldn't be allowed to name cultivars with unpronounceable names, but honey eye, the Seascape is another one that is decent. But I think that most of the modern varieties you'll be pretty happy with if you can find one that ripens when you want it and you treat the strawberries well and do what you should to keep them productive. And so it just boils down to if you want a June bearer, which are going to be the more productive ones, you get a lot of berries over a period of about a month that you can process into jams, jellies, freeze them, whatever. Or if you want an ever-bearer, which you'll get a moderately heavy crop in the spring, and then some production through the rest of the summer, and then a little bit heavier as we cool down. If you're going to do that, you want to plant what's called a day-neutral variety, because they're a little more likely to bloom. But once we're consistently above 90, the strawberries oftentimes stop producing and then start again in the fall.
How early can they plant strawberries?
It depends on where you live, but you want it to still be cool, but most danger of frost to be gone. Because if you plant them and they break dormancy and we get a frost, that could do them in, and so they may need to be covered.
All right. Rick is on the line in Alpine. Good morning, Rick. What was your question?
Just had a question. A question about raspberries and blackberries with regards to fertilizing. How much fertilizing to get production of fruit without so much that you just get vine and no fruit?
Almost none. The raspberries and blackberries are very productive without a lot of extra fertilizer. And I, for homeowners, I don't usually recommend fertilizing them. If you have raspberries, when they're done fruiting in the spring, you can do a light application then, but it's going to be pretty minimal.
What about strawberries?
Again, like fairly minimal on those two, because if you do any fertilization, it's after they're done fruiting, and then don't do it again unless you feel like you absolutely have to.
And last of all, then, what about those peach trees fertilizing?
Peach trees, if you need to fertilize peach trees, you do it in mid to late March. Depending on the trunk width, if it's a new tree, a quarter cup is plenty. If it's a larger tree, you know, a half to three quarters of a cup. But you spread that under the canopy of the tree. And if you need to, you can do it again in mid-May in the hobby orchards. But I don't like, in hobby orchards, I don't like pruning peaches much past mid-May because nitrogen delays dormancy and you need the trees to be able to use that nitrogen, you know, through the early summer when it's still cooler and then still have plenty of opportunity in the fall to go dormant.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right, Rick, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Tana, wants to know, when can a honeysuckle be pruned?
Right after it's done blooming is the time to prune them. If you need to renovate, so to speak, and just cut them way back, you can in the spring, but they just won't flower for 2 to 3 years after the fact.
Okay, next listener wants to know, how are dwarf apple trees with multiple varieties pruned?
I'm always leery of the fruit cocktail trees or the multiple variety trees just because you need to be able to identify where all the varieties are. Mm-hmm. And you usually have, so let's say you have four varieties, one or two of them grow much more aggressively than the other two, and so you have to prune them harder. And so if it's the only option you have, you can do it, and it's fine, but it's just better in theory than in practice.
John is wondering, he has a 2 to 3 year old peach tree that didn't produce the new growth that you usually prune, and he's wondering what might be happening.
It was a peach tree?
Mm-hmm.
There could be a lot of things going on. There could be a borer in it. It could have gotten
only 2 to 3 years old.
Yeah, vascular wilt disease. There could be a girdling root. It's just something that requires more investigation.
Could it be just a slow grower and it just didn't?
Not unless it's a dwarf peach. Okay. Peaches should be growing 16 to 18 inches a year when they're young.
Okay, maybe, John, you could send in a picture on Facebook, on the Facebook Messenger, and we could take a look at it there.
Or call in so we can get more details that way.
There you go. Next person wants to know, is it too early to weed and feed your lawn?
It is. The weed and feed needs it. You want the lawn weeds going, and so I would give it another 2 or 3 weeks at least. Mm-hmm. And if you use weed and feed, the lawn needs to be wet when you apply it so that the weed and feed sticks to the weeds. Otherwise, if you apply when it's dry, it doesn't do a very good job.
All right. Next listener would like to know, how do you get rid of elm beetles? What do you do with these things?
Unfortunately, the only way to get rid of them is to get rid of the elm trees. It's usually Siberian elm.
I don't like that answer
either. No, but because they're so mobile, even if you spray them out of your yard, they're back within a few days. And so the best thing you can do to keep them out of the house is to seal up the foundation, use some caulking to seal up the cracks, make sure that the windowsills are sealed, get door sweeps that rub on the ground so that they can't go underneath to try to keep them out. But unless the elm trees are gone, they're going to be there.
All right. Next person wants to know, how close do apple trees need to be for pollination?
Within 100 yards.
So
usually,
if it's 2 or 3 houses down the street, is that close
perfectly
enough?
Fine.
Okay.
Yeah. The apples, there are 1 or 2 crab apples that will not pollinate others. Mm. You know, spring snow is the main one. But even fruiting crab apples, if the crab apple gets any sort of fruit on it, they're suitable pollinators for apple trees too. So in urban and suburban settings, I just don't worry about it because 95% of the time you're going to get sufficient pollination.
Okay, we need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. You can call us. Phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your question, 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. Taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Todd, our next listener wants to know, when should they fertilize red bud trees that they planted last spring?
Any time is fine. You know, it's one of those things that we think we must. You know, I have to fertilize it. If they do, I think just less than a quarter cup of lawn fertilizer would be more than sufficient, maybe even like an eighth of a cup. And I would just spread it around the root ball of the tree and do no more.
Okay, next listener says they got the advisory to spray dormant spray, but rain is coming, so should they wait?
If it's going to rain, you need 24 hours so that it's effective.
So probably not.
I would
looking
wait.
Outside, it looks kind of iffy out
it's
there.
It's a little gloomy.
Next listener says, what if their apricot tree already has blossoms and it's time to spray the dormant oil?
Don't spray unless you want to take the year off of getting fruit.
Okay, dangerous thing to do. Luann is on the line in Ogden. Good morning, Luann. What was your question?
Thank you for taking my call. I have a set of roses that we bought at the grocery store about, it was around around the 14th of February. The buds or the flowers on the top, I still have some of. They are dead. They're gone. But down the shoots of the stem, there are some shoots of clusters of leaves coming out of that stem. And I wonder, there's no roots on the bottom of the stem, just on the side of the stem. Can I plant those, or are they going to grow, or what do I need to do?
So it was a bouquet of roses, you said?
Yes.
Okay. And you've left them in water and they've started to root out a bit.
They haven't rooted out, but the stem has thrown out some shoots of leaves.
I would throw it out. It's just not worth, I don't know. There's a couple things going on. One, those could be patented roses and illegal for you to propagate them.
What?
Okay.
So that could be one thing, but then trying to root them, you can do that and you can get on YouTube or just look up extension and rose propagation and it will tell you how to do it in water and a few different things. But okay. It's just for me personally, just for efficiency, I'm just going to go to a garden center and find one that has the roses that I like and plant that. I don't know. It's just easier. But if you want to do it for the hobby and interest, there are ways to do it. But, you know, it's probably going to be a year to 2 years before you get something up to size that you can plant outside.
Okay. So there's probably no chance that they would start rooting out in the water?
Well, it isn't that there's no chance. It's just, is it worth it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
if you need a hobby,
if you want a hobby,
right?
And you want to take up to 2 years to be able to plant it outside, you could try it. But it's just one of those things that, you know, for me, when I pay $25 or $30 for a rose bush at the garden center, it's worth it.
I just want to know if it would ever work.
It would. You know, in theory, it would. It's just a practicality.
Okay. Could I use Roton on it or something like that?
You could try. It's just, I mean, if you're bent on doing it and you're going to do it, get some Roton, and you would need to get a pot with vermiculite or perlite or, you know, a really light potting soil and put it in there, and you would cut the stems back to where you had two buds above ground and two below. And you would have to let it root out in the container, and what you would do is get a Ziploc or a similar plastic bag, put it over the top of the pot, and I would put 6 or 7 pencil holes in it. So, and you need to support it so that the bag doesn't collapse on the rose, but that keeps the humidity higher. And when the rose starts to leaf out, you can, you don't want to take that bag off immediately, but it's going to take between 4 and 8 weeks for those cuttings to start to form roots to do it. But to get that rooted out enough, it's going to be at least next spring before you can put it outside.
Okay. It's just full of shoots of leaves on the stems.
Well, and that's not really a great thing because there's no roots to support the leaves. And because it's already forming the leaves, you would have to take the leaves off for it to have any chance of forming enough roots to support the leaves longer term.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Luann, for your call this morning. Next listener, Tom wants to know, is painting the peach tree trunk with borer killer as effective as spraying?
You don't ever do that with concentrate. It could penetrate through the trunk because of the what the pesticide is mixed into are usually petroleum-based. And when you dilute that with water, there's additives in there to make it soluble with water. And so I guess you could. It's not an approved application method. So I can't really say, do it. But yeah, it would work if you wanted to. The other thing I do is just get a spray bottle, a gallon sprayer, or even a quart sprayer, if I've just got 1 or 2 trees, and mix enough to fill my quart sprayer and use it like a spray painter. So where you want that bark wet, but not dripping. And so you can actually maybe spray it a couple times to get it on there, but just don't do that with concentrate.
All right. Susan is on the line in South Ogden. Good morning, Susan. What was your question?
Good morning. I have a Canadian chokecherry tree that is probably 10 years in the ground, 30, 35 feet high. It looked like it was getting really full in the center, so I had somebody come and give me a bid to do some thinning of the tree. And their bid was $675. So my question is, do those trees need to be thinned?
No, they don't.
Okay, so I can just save my $675.
Yeah, I mean, that trees, if you have a bunch of crossing branches that are rubbing against each other, you can go in and maybe prune 5 or 10% of the branches out. But there's no inherent reason that those trees need to be regularly pruned. You know, in the wild, they're not, and they do okay. And so unless there's going to be major structural issues that are going to create a hazard or affect the health of the tree, I would just leave it alone.
Well, I've been looking at it because it doesn't have leaves yet, and there's a lot of small branches that cross each other. But, of course, it's way higher than what I could ever get up there and do, and that's why I called a professional company to come and look at it. But after hearing their bid, I'm kind of talking myself out of it.
Well, and if you did do some pruning on it, it wouldn't hurt the tree. It may improve it a bit structurally, but there's no inherent reason that the tree needs to be pruned unless you've got really bad crotch angles or, you know, major branches that are touching that might cause, you know, a risk in the future to the tree, or if a branch is a safety hazard. But I would just leave it be.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Susan, thanks for your call this morning. We're going to take a break, come back with Sarah. We'll be up next. Number to call, 801-575-8255, or you can text 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls and questions. Let's get right back to our phone lines. We have Sarah, who is in West Point. Good morning, Sarah. What was your question this morning?
Hey, good morning. So I was actually listening in last week, and somebody had texted in asking if you can grow ramps in Utah. And you guys didn't really have an answer. I think maybe you weren't familiar with ramps. They mostly grow back east. And I just wanted to, I was hoping maybe that listener would be on today. I wanted to let them know that, yes, you can. I've harvested ramps this week. It's an allium that grows wild in the forests back in the eastern part of the country. But I've got a couple of patches in my yard. They grow from, just from bulbs, like other alliums. And, I just wanted them to know that it's possible.
So how long did it take for the patches to form?
I planted these about 2 years ago.
And how
so they're
wide
still
are
kind
they?
Of small patches.
Okay.
Not very wide. I would say I've got a couple of them, maybe 6 inches at this point. I also have a patch of a European relative, Ramson.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of sometimes called bear garlic, which is similar, but a little bit doesn't grow quite as tall and thin as ramps do. And those I've had for probably 10 years. And it's spread, you know. It spreads slowly, but it spreads.
So we're talking about an edible plant. For those people who are not familiar with this, how do you use them? What do they taste like?
So it tastes a little bit garlicky. You eat the greens. They are a very early spring green, which I love. Like I said, I was eating them this week. A lot of people eat them in soups, salads. I actually like to put them on sandwiches.
All right.
So.
That's great. So are you growing, are you above the bluff or below the bluff?
Below.
Below.
Yeah.
So your soil's a little bit more loamy instead of sandy. So that's good. So that's a little bit more average with the rest of the Wasatch Front. Yeah, that's one in all my years I'd never run into. And a work colleague texts me and says, yeah, I need to hit you over the head with a bat because they do exist. And
yeah, but it makes sense. I mean, like I said, they don't grow here. They're very common back east. They'll have ramp festivals in the spring. People go and forage for them out in the forests.
You know, and reading about them, they in areas they've become endangered from over harvesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's good to know they grow here because I did find there were a few sites online where you could order them.
Yep. Yeah, right. They're fantastic early spring green.
Very good. Well, thank
Sarah,
you.
Appreciate your call. Thanks for calling today.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. Next listener, Ton, says, in the past for fruit trees, you recommend using half the fertilizer now, then half in May. How much fertilizer in total per tree, and what kind is best?
The best I can tell them is to download USU's fact sheets on the particular fruit tree there will be some fertilizer recommendations because it all depends on the size of the tree.
Okay.
So I can't really give a good answer.
Specific answer on that.
Because it, in some of the fact sheets, in 5-year increments, you know, or the width of the tree, but you don't, fruit trees just don't need a lot of fertilizer, especially in hobby orchards. And so, you know, my dad's orchard, my father-in-law's orchard, I guess his gets some lawn fertilizer, but fruit trees oftentimes do just fine on very minimal fertilization. If they're in the lawn and you're fertilizing your lawn 2 or 3 times a year, that is plenty. But if they're on their own, then under the canopy, you know, anywhere from 1/8 of a cup to up to a cup, depending on the size of the tree. But it's just really hard to say.
All right. Next listener is Blake in Pleasant View. Good morning, Blake. What was your question this morning?
Good morning, Tom. Last week I called. My celebrity maple tree is 25 feet tall, trunk's about 14 inch diameter. You told me to put some iron on it. I've also noticed this past winter, about 5 feet up, the whole, all the bark has now separated, come off of the trunk of the tree on half of it. So there's big, huge barks come off.
Is it on the south or west side of the tree?
What's that? It's on the south side of the tree.
Southwest winter injury. Maples have really thin bark that's easily damaged during the winter because you get sap flow during the day and then it freezes at night and burst the cells in the conductive tissue.
Okay. My dad, Gary, said, oh, you better call Tom. I'm like, here I am again.
So, yeah, there's nothing you can do right now. Just let the bark flake off. If they've got jagged edges, you can carefully cut it. But if you start to wrap the tree in the winter with white tree tape and take it off in the spring, the bark will actually heal back over a period of 3 or 4 years.
Okay, so maybe wrap it with that cloth stuff in May.
Not in May, in October.
Oh, in October.
And
okay.
Take it all off in March. Okay.
Oh, I see. I got you. All right, well, thanks, Ben.
You're welcome.
All right, Blake, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, says they planted a Honeycrisp tree 4 years ago, still has not produced one apple. Is that unusual?
No, it's not unusual.
How long does it usually take?
This, you know, 90% of the trees will produce fruit within 3 or 4 years, but you get 1 out of 10 that sometimes won't produce flowers for up to 10 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And I don't know why they do that, because even they will have flowers at the garden center, and then you bring them home, and 10 years later, there's still nothing. But I've seen it happen, and I don't have a good scientific answer why. But what will happen is over that period of time, you'll see 3 or 4 flowers, and then the next year, 10 or 15 or 20, and then by the 3rd or 4th, they're in full production.
So if it looks healthy, just be patient?
Be patient. Make sure that you're not pruning the fruiting wood off, because that's also a cause of that. If the tree's pruned really heavily, that will sometimes shock it into... When I say that is such an unscientific thing, but you cut a lot of the mature wood off, and it forms juvenile growth that takes 3 or 4 years to mature. So that could be a cause also.
Okay. Next listener wants to know what the trick is to getting Arp rosemary to overwinter in Kaysville.
Put it in a protected spot is the best I can tell them. And it doesn't like really clay soil. And so if it's in really wet situations, if you're in West Kaysville near the lake, that's going to be a little tougher to do, but it does best against a west wall, somewhere where the soil doesn't freeze and it's not too exposed, but it does need 8 hours of sunlight a day.
Jacob in Tooele says the Virginia creeper has consumed his backyard and is choking everything out. How do they get rid of it?
Boy, the fall is the best time to do that, but they can start clipping it and dabbing every stem. And so you don't take it clear to the ground, but leave 3 or 4 inches of stem above ground or branch. Cut it and immediately get concentrated Roundup with a inexpensive watercolor paintbrush and just paint the top of the stem with concentrated Roundup. Do that on every one. It will try to come back a few times, but that's going to be the best bet at eliminating it.
Next listener wants to know, are ashes from leaves good fertilizer?
not really. They are used, especially when there wasn't commercial fertilizer, they would add especially potassium into the soil. We have already generally a lot of potassium in our soils. And so if it was a 16th of an inch once every year or two, it's not going to harm anything. But to just go and spread a quarter inch is not a great thing.
All right, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. And when we come back, we're going to have some tips for you on tree planting. And thank you for joining us on this Saturday morning for the KSL Greenhouse. Phone lines are open. You can call us 801-575-8255, or you can text us your questions at 575-00.